All right, it's 2:07. Got another 2 hours of fun for you coming up at 3:25. We're going to talk to Andrew Schwartz. He's a professor of IT at the E.J. Orso College of Business at LSU. We're a few years into the era of artificial intelligence now. The technology is no longer in its infancy. It's speeding up. It's making changes in our world so fast, it's hard to keep up. So we'll take a look at where we are and we'll take a look at where we're headed. In the last hour, some smart aleck texted in and said, let's see if I can go back and find this text now. They said, if you have a question about caterpillars and moths, contact James Gumb at precious.com. He's an expert. I did not get the reference, but this is, of course, a shout out to Silence of the Lambs, which I haven't seen in a pretty long time. But yes, I remember the creepy guy and his little dog. Thank you for that. We're all having a good time here. Here's a text. Oh, what is this about? Oh, yeah. Here's a text that says, hey, I remember when younger people were picking up the jet black caterpillars. They didn't seem to be the ones that sting. I told him, I said, I got too much caterpillar trauma, man. I'm not picking up any caterpillars. I don't care what they look like. I'm just simply not going to mess with that. Yikes on bikes. Really excited about French Quarter Fest. I'm fixing to get out there on Saturday and maybe Sunday a little bit. You know, I always have this tradition that I do at French Quarter Fest, and maybe you have a French Quarter Fest tradition as well. If you care to share, you can give me a call. Shoot me a text, 504-260-1870. I always like to go get the crawfish at the Mint on the very last day. And for a long time, that was the Astral Project that was performing there. But that has changed a couple times. Let's see here. I'm going to look up the Esplanade in the Shade stage. Nope, Astral Project back at 5:50. Hell yeah, on Sunday. I'm going to go sit in the shade and listen to the Astral Project and eat some crawfish and drink a couple of beet of strawberries. I talked to the strawberry guy yesterday from the Strawberry Festival, and he said he'd never had an beet of strawberry, which is fine. But I told him, man, if you've never been able to sit down to a piping hot crawfish boil and enjoy an ice cold strawberry beer from Abita, man, what are you doing? What are you doing? That's a match made in heaven right there. Your thoughts?
Oh, I was just wondering if he gave you an update on you being a strawberry jester in the royal court.
No, I didn't hear anything back yet. I said, well, you know, they got the strawberry king and the strawberry queen. I said, hey, if you need a strawberry court jester, you know, I could do that. I'll tell you what, I'll do it for free.
Maybe this is what you should do.
I don't know how that
present
works.
Present him with an Abita strawberry beer, and then maybe that you can kind of, I don't want to say the word bribe, but maybe that can coerce him into allowing
him.
You to be the strawberry jester.
Nice. Absolutely right. Well, you know, in a few minutes, we're going to talk more about the sublime, sublimity. I would go ahead and say that a strawberry, an ice cold Abita strawberry, and crawfish, hot boiled crawfish, pretty close. I don't know if that's going to meet the definition of sublime, but it is very, very good. But, I mean, that's not, you know, when we say we're going to experience the sublime, we don't just mean, oh, something's like good, or that was a good concert, that was a good show. I'm talking about the stuff that takes your breath away, man, like Ezekiel seeing the angel, you know, the Moses in the burning bush, like these like profound moments that maybe rattle you or make you change the way you feel about yourself and your place in the universe. We'll talk about that coming up in just a few minutes. Coleman, if you have an example of something, a moment where you experienced the sublime, you know, you may enjoy thinking about that and you can share it with us after the jump. But first, light it up. It's time for the 2 o'clock news bomb. Strap in, buckle up, hunker down. First out of the gate. Up on Capitol Hill, things are moving after a long, long night. Johnson has the votes. Johnson has the votes.
House Republicans narrowly approved their budget framework. Speaker Mike Johnson had to work into the night to satisfy Republican holdouts who had refused to advance trillions of dollars in tax breaks without deeper spending cuts.
We reaffirmed our commitments. It's real. We want to find real savings. We have an obligation to do that. but we also have to protect these essential programs. We can and will do both.
Johnson says essential programs like Medicaid will be protected. Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries says Democrats will push back.
Every day, every week, every month, until we bury this reckless Republican budget resolution in the ground.
Central to the budget framework is the Republican effort to preserve the tax breaks approved in 2017 during Donald Trump's first term, while potentially adding the new ones he promised during the 2024 campaign. Ed Donahue, Washington.
You may have seen footage or seen some reporting about Trump at this black tie fundraiser. He was kind of chewing out some of these House Republicans. He was saying, y'all got to get on the same page. You got to pass this budget. And you ready for it? He says, stop grandstanding. Okay, the man who once held up a Sharpie-altered hurricane map, held a Bible upside down in front of St. John's Church, paid actors $50 apiece to cheer for him coming down the golden escalator, bragged for months about passing a basic dementia screening, pushed other world leaders aside on stage so he could be in the center. He sells Trump NFTs, sells Trump Bibles, sells Trump speakers. He put his signature on COVID stimulus checks. He put a photo of himself on a $5 million gold card. He calls himself the chosen one. He throws paper towels at hurricane victims. And apparently he wants a North Korea-style military parade for his birthday. But he thinks y'all should stop grandstanding. All righty then. The European Union will put tariff retaliation on hold for 90 days to match the pause that Trump put in place yesterday.
The European Union has said it will put tariff retaliation measures on hold for 90 days to match President Donald Trump's pause on his sweeping new tariffs. Speaking at a press conference in Brussels, Commission spokesperson Olaf Gilles said Europe is ready to strike a deal with the US.
We appreciate that you have brought this pause on so-called reciprocal tariffs, and we in turn are now pausing our proposed countermeasures. We're ready to make deals. Let's talk.
Trump had imposed a 20% levy on goods from the EU as part of his onslaught of tariffs against global trading partners. EU member countries then voted to approve a set of retaliatory tariffs on $23 billion in goods in response. But on Wednesday, Trump said he would pause his tariffs for 90 days to give countries a chance to negotiate solutions to US trade concerns. Countries subject to the pause will instead face Trump's 10% baseline tariff. I'm Lawrence Brooks.
This whole situation reminds me of Big Daddy with Adam Sandler. You remember, did you see Big Daddy with Adam Sandler?
Yes, I have.
So you remember the part where he's sitting down with Julian, his little adopted kid, and the delivery guy played by Rob Schneider, who's like this vaguely foreign Middle Eastern delivery guy. I don't know. And they're playing this card game and Julian says, I win. And Adam Sandler goes, what are you talking about? You win. I had the same cards. And he said, well, I win. Okay, so I guess it doesn't matter what's happening. Trump is like Julie. He says, I win. No matter what cards are dealt, there's tariffs in place, I win. Retaliatory tariffs, I win. I'm going to lift the tariffs, I win. The retaliatory tariffs are going to be lifted, I win. I guess this
is perception
is
reality.
Yeah, he just keeps winning. He did threaten us with this. Egg prices have increased to a record high despite President Trump's predictions that they would come down, and the bird flu outbreak is actually slowing down.
Egg prices increased to a record high. U.S. egg prices increased again last month to reach a record-setting $6.23 per dozen. That's despite President Donald Trump's predictions, a drop in wholesale prices, and no egg farms having bird flu outbreaks. The prices reported in the Consumer Price Index may not decline until after Easter because demand remains high. Industry experts were expecting retail prices to fall because wholesale egg prices dropped significantly in March. Trump tried to take credit for the wholesale price drop, but experts say the president's bird flu plan that focuses on strengthening egg farmers' defenses against the virus is likely to be more of a long-term help. I'm Haya Panjwani.
The USDA says that it takes 6 months for a chicken to start laying again after it's been replaced. But meanwhile, it only takes 5 minutes for a grocery store to triple the price and blame it on logistics. Egg prices are so high that people are hiding plastic eggs this Easter instead of real ones. The only thing scarier than not finding an egg is finding it and realizing you can't afford to eat it. Egg prices hit a new record high of $6.23 per dozen. At this point, it's not just breakfast. It's a status symbol. So you can leave your Lexus and Rolex and Armani suits at home. If you really want to impress people, just walk around double-fisting hard-boiled eggs. President Donald Trump also weighed in on any escalation in the trade war with China that could go beyond tariffs.
The tariff fight between the world's two largest economies has spiraled into greater peril as President Donald Trump tries to narrow his global trade war into a direct and risky face-off with Beijing. When asked by a reporter if Trump was concerned that the situation would escalate to something higher than just tariffs, Trump emphasized the military might of the United States.
This country is very powerful. It's far more powerful than people understand. We have weaponry that nobody has any idea what it is, and it is the most powerful weapons in the world that we have.
But then Trump softened his tone somewhat when he praised the intellect of China's president.
He's a very smart man. He loves his country. I know that for a fact. I know him very well. And I think he's going to want to get to a deal. I think that's going to happen. We'll get a phone call at some point, and it'll be off to the races. It'll be a great thing for them. It'll be a great thing for us.
I'm Lisa Dwyer.
I'm old enough to remember when Donald Trump said that we had like the weakest, worst military. They were ruined by the women and the black people. But I guess now we have the best military so he can threaten China with them. Trump also said that China showed a lack of respect to the world's markets, quote, because nothing says respect like blowing up the global supply chain network with an all caps tweet at 2 a.m. Chinese state media said, quote, the sky will not fall, which is less reassuring when you realize it comes from a government that is currently stockpiling grain, rare earth metals, and MREs. And finally, the U.S.'s trade war with China. It could impact the American movie industry if Beijing puts tariffs on movies that imports from the U.S.
Last year, Godzilla Kong made more money in China than anywhere else in the world, including the U.S.
Should the big studios be concerned?
Yes, they should be concerned.
Monique White is executive vice president at California Pictures, a distributor of independent films. She says studios losing revenue from such a massive market could impact production in the future.
That means their budgets are going to have to go down because they're not going to see that money coming out of China.
Now, the China Film Administration said that it will, quote, respect the audience's choices by cutting U.S. movies. Okay. Yes, the classic, you can choose anything that we have already approved of model of democracy. Look, China already censors the hell out of American movies anyway. You know, maybe you don't know this. I thought this was pretty funny. In the Chinese version of Fight Club, you remember at the end when they blow up all the skyscrapers? In the Chinese version, instead of all those buildings blowing up while the Pixies play, a closing title card pops up saying, the police quickly figured out the whole plan, arrested all the criminals, and prevented the bomb from exploding. That's like if at the end of Thelma and Louise, instead of them driving off the cliff, they just cut to a state trooper looking into the camera and saying, click it or tick it. When we come back, I'll tell you a little bit about my experience watching Hamilton at the Sanger Theater last night. It was, not to put too fine a point on it, sublime. And then I want to hear from you. I got no more scheduled interviews for about an hour, so now's a great time to get in touch on the Oakland Art Jewelers Talking Text Line, 504-260-1870. You can react to anything you just heard from the headlines there in the news bomb, or I would love to talk to you about your sublime experience. Sounds good, right? Sounds cool. Let's do it after the jump. I'm Ian Hoke in for Scoot. Be right back after this. None of us have ever been to heaven and come back. We couldn't really tell you what that feels like, but maybe you've gotten close. Last night, you know, I've been talking about it all week. I saw Hamilton, and there was a moment, maybe a few moments, several moments, where I was just floored. And, you know, and I'm not, and again, I'm not talking about, like, I'm impressed or I'm entertained, but I actually moved. Is it these moments where you feel totally overwhelmed, like something is bigger than you, something is bigger than the room. This is reminding me of something when I'm experiencing this last night that we just don't talk about enough, I don't think. The experience of the sublime. not just liking something, not just, oh, that was a great show, or, you know, but the sense that you are actually witnessing greatness, beauty, genius, terror, awe, all wrapped up it together in the same time, same thing. It's a moment that can lift you out of the everyday and make you feel small and lucky at the same time. I want to ask you, when's the last time you experienced the sublime? Maybe that was a concert, a sunset, a painting or a piece of art, a sermon, a moment in your church or your synagogue or your mosque, a moment with someone you love, something that really stopped you in your tracks and made you go, this is what life is all about. This is it. So call me, text me. I don't have anybody else to talk to until 3:25. We got plenty of runway for you. Call me 504-260-1870. Let's talk about those moments that make you feel deeply, cosmically alive. You ever cry at a concert? Has a movie ever ended and you just sit there in stunned silence? You know, you just have to kind of breathe for a moment because of what you just experienced. Have you ever seen something so beautiful it made you feel small in a good way? It made you feel connected to other people. You know, maybe it was the birth of a child, your child or someone else's child. Maybe you're watching your kid, you know, they're sleeping or they're singing or playing, and it hits you right in the heart. Have you ever sat across from somebody at a dinner table and think, God, I can't believe I get to be in this person's world. I can't believe I get to be a part of this family. Maybe it was a moment with a parent or a family member, a loved one, when they said something small, or they just looked at you in a certain way, and that moment stuck with you for years. Maybe you've been in a position where you're holding someone's hand in their final moments on this earth, and you feel something that you can't explain. It's peaceful, and it's sad, and it's beautiful all at once. It could be a simple ritual, like baking with your grandmother, you go fishing with your dad, dancing in the kitchen with your kids. These moments take on this unexpected meaning, and maybe you know it in the moment or maybe you don't, but it sticks with you. Maybe you've heard a family story or seen an old photo that made you stop and feel deeply connected to the people who came before you. I love that. I mean, I think that's a great reason to keep around like an actual physical photo album. You know, in the last couple decades, we've all gotten quite used to having our photos just live in the digital world on our phones or on our computers. I haven't been great about this lately, but for a long time, I was really pretty serious about printing photos and putting them in photo books like we did for the 100 years before we got the smartphone. That opens up opportunities for you and your descendants to go back and look at these moments that you thought were important in your life, or maybe they weren't important photos, but you know, they capture a moment, they capture a spirit or a vibe that comes through to the people who are looking at that photo later. 504-260-1870. Really want to hear from you. Let's start out on line two. Janice is back. Good afternoon, Janice.
Yeah, Ian, how you doing today?
I'm doing okay. You doing okay?
Okay, I'm hanging in.
All right.
doing best I can.
Yeah.
No, there was something that I wanted to mention that people out there may not know about. It would not be good, though. Now, you know how you can go to the voter portal, mm-hmm. and you can register to vote, and registering to vote has not been, to my knowledge, it's never been difficult. And, I mean, I understand they don't want people here in the country that, you know, illegally here just came over the border and stuff like that to register to vote. Okay, I get that.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems to me, the more I'm hearing about Social Security and everything, Trump is making things harder for people. Now, he wants to change things. so that if you need to register to vote, now I've heard that if you don't vote in, I think it's two federal elections or something like that, that they take you off the voter roll. So you'd have to register again. Okay. But to do this, according to him, this is what he would like to do, you would need to use your birth certificate or your passport.
Right.
Now, most people don't have a passport. And, I mean, I don't even know how this would be done on a computer. But here's the thing. A woman, let's say her name is Julie Smith. Then she marries Robert Jones. Okay, once she marries Mr. Jones, if she takes his last name, her husband's name, which a lot of people do, then Smith on her birth certificate is no longer considered her legal name. So then Miss Jones would not be able to use her birth certificate to register to vote. So how would that work for people? I'll tell you something. I just, about 3 weeks ago today, I have been really upset for the past 3 weeks. When I heard about Musk with the Social Security's a Ponzi scheme and it's an entitlement with Mr. Rogan, and then I heard what he told Mr. Kudlow and everything, trying to say that entitlements, that's the ones we have to eliminate and everything.
Yeah.
And then I'm hearing all this other stuff. The more I am hearing, it's just very, very upsetting to me. So, I mean, I'm just asking myself, why would you want to make it harder? I mean, like I said, I understand they don't want people registering that shouldn't register, but
sure.
But they would have to be a better way to do this, I would think.
I mean, I think that's the case, Janice. You're exactly right. That's the case with a lot of these policies, it's easy to pitch it and say, hey, this is what we're hoping to do. These are the things that we're hoping to achieve. But the pattern has been, I think, clear for many years now that the methodology is deeply flawed, and that especially now in this term, the people who helped kind of massage these ideas say, oh, we're gonna make sure that nobody's voting illegally, but we can't do anything that's going to mean, you know, millions of women who change their name can't vote. Those people don't work in this administration anymore. So I guess we'll all find out kind of at the same time. But yeah, I feel for you, Janice. I do. I know this isn't what you thought you were going to get. But there it is. Let's go to Ken on line 3. Ken, you're on the air. Good afternoon.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. I want to tell you what made me feel sublime. Back when Tracy Porter ran that interception back for a touchdown in the Super
Absolutely.
Bowl, me and my sister were watching it. And I was like in stunned disbelief, and my sister was in tears. She's now deceased. Her name is Adrian. She was in tears, and I was I can't believe it. We're going to win the Super Bowl. And I would call that, if that's the definition of sublime,
I think that
mean out of earthly experience, because I'm 76, and I've been following the Saints since I was a teenager.
Oh, that must have been
huge
for you. And
to see that, yeah, I used to sneak in Tulane Stadium. It was so big at halftime, you could just walk in. I saw all the games after halftime.
I love it, Ken.
And that was my sublime moment when Tracy Porter ran that interception back for a touchdown.
That's perfect.
And I realized we were going to win the Super Bowl.
I got one kind of in that same vein, Ken. I remember I was at Cooter Browns. I was at Cooter Browns for the first Saints game after Katrina, right? When they were playing the Falcons.
Oh yeah, that game,
and,
of course. Yeah.
So they got the blocked punt. But you know the band Green Day. I really, really like Green Day. And when Green Day came out and played the concert before the game, and they play this song, "The Saints Are Coming," and They soup up the lyrics a little bit to kind of talk about what happened during and after Katrina. And for me, that was a moment that really took my breath away.
I want to hang up now where I can hear myself.
Okay, that's great. Thank you, Ken. Appreciate you being a part of the show. Yeah, that concert before the first game back in the dome after Katrina. I wasn't in that Superdome, but man, I can only imagine what it must have been like to, you know, after everything that we all went through. And then, you know, about a year later, they've done everything they can to get the Saints back, and the Superdome is open, and we're all in there, and we're playing against the Falcons, and then they bring out Green Day and U2, and they play this song about how the Saints are coming, and phew, I bet there wasn't a dry eye in the house, man. I bet that was really special. Let's go to James on the North Shore. Good afternoon, brother. James, what's going on out there?
Hey, man, thanks for having me on. First, I got to say about Bourbon Street, man, there has to be a water park bar on Bourbon Street. We got to have a water park bar on Bourbon Street. 3 stories high, so you can go to the 3rd story and shoot down the water slide. Phew! Water park slide on Bourbon Street, man. I'm telling you, just a park bar.
Yeah.
It would be so cool. When it's summer, it's smoking hot, you would have the water park bar on Bourbon. So cool. All right. Now, call today about what you're just talking about. What really goes in the next hour, too, with Sublime and the AI. Mm-hmm. Because when I was able to create, through the AI, my like using my lyrics and prompting AI with industrial metal, and I'm going to say my little prompts because it kind of makes it sound a certain way, and be able to hear songs that I never would have been able to imagine. You know, I could imagine, but never actually hear and live it. Now I get to live it and play it. And it just opens up your world. I'm pitching myself on stage now. I'm pitching myself with some other guys making a band. Not that you continue just doing it with AI, but you move on to people and putting bands together. But AI gives you the opportunity to first say, hey, there is something here. The lyrics that I'm writing could with music really sound good. And I even got my customers who are 70 and 80 years old who've listened to it and said, man, this is good stuff, man. I mean, like, a couple of my, I mean, they love it. I mean, I wish you'd play a sample real quick. Ian, I sent you a country song. It's a honky-tonk song, so it ain't real aggressive and heavy. Sure. It's a really good song. It's about a cashier on the North Shore who's a friend of mine who is like, when I pull up to the pump to get gas, one look at you and my heart collapsed. But I did it in a honky-tonk version, so it sounds more honky-tonk better than that.
Oh, nice.
And then it's so cool. And I told her, because she, just by being so cool, she beats back my demons with her smile. And it says it in the song, how it says that. And then it says at the end, like, you know, I continue to creep one deep. You know, I wish you'd play the song. It's so cool. The people would love it, man. Maybe the next hour we can give them a little sample of that honky-tonk song.
Yeah, I'll check it out. I'll take a listen. Yeah, yeah.
The first 20 seconds and the last 20 seconds. I think it'd be perfect for the audience, man. It's really good stuff, and I think people would like it. But that really opened my mind up to bigger things, like this subliminal feeling of, wow, there's so much more.
Yeah.
Just do that AI like that, man. I just wanted to share, man.
Great. Thanks for being a part of the show today, James. Nice having you with us. We will go to break here with another song about heaven, just like the last one. I really like this one. I mean, this song's been around a long time, but it was really just like the last 4 or 5 years I came to appreciate what a great song this is. On the Oakland Art Jewelers Talking Text Line, we are talking about some of the sublime moments in our lives. Got room for a couple more, but let's start out with Jim in Madisonville. Jim, you're on the air. Good afternoon.
Hi, Ian. How you doing, man?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you today?
Great.
I'm
one of the best moments of my life was when that C-130 lifted off the runway in Vietnam.
Oh.
To bring me back home.
Oh, brother. I bet that was something else.
One of the best
moments
of my life. Wow. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was going to ask, I don't know how much of this you feel like sharing with us, but, you know, how long were you over there for?
13 months.
How old were you?
18.
Damn, man.
But I was a M60 machine gunner.
Uh-huh. And so you're in the C-130 and you see the wetlands and everything disappearing behind you while you're coming home, huh?
Absolutely. I was in Marine Corps.
Wow.
And I got home on a Wednesday, went to work at Sunbeam Bakery that Monday.
I bet that was sublime, man. At a bakery, huh?
You talk about a change.
Oh, no
that was
doubt.
You talk about a change of life.
I can't imagine. Yeah, and young. You're absolutely right. That is crazy. Well, thanks for what you did for our country, Jim. I'm glad you came home. I know a lot of fellas didn't. I'm glad that you're here with us to tell us about it today. And what a moment that must have been for you.
I appreciate you.
Thanks for listening, Jim. You keep in touch and call anytime. We'll get a couple more phone calls lined up, but I did want to read some of these text messages. Here's somebody that says, "Hey, Ian, a sublime moment for me was seeing Fela Kuti at Tipitina's in the middle of the 80s, which I'm guessing a not insignificant amount of people listening don't know who Fela Kuti is. He's a very, very important, iconic, influential African musician, not an African-American musician, but from the continent. A big fan of his work. I love listening to that music. If I had an opportunity to see that live at Tipitina's, oh, and I'm sure the ticket price was like $9 or something. Sublime, indeed. Here's a text that says, "Hey, Ian, thank you for the subject today. I'm tearing up writing this. I'm a 50-year-old dad. The first time I held my son and the first time I held my daughter, I felt overwhelming love, reverence, and a sense of purpose. I've never been the same. My kids are half of my heart. Jake will be 18 tomorrow, and Shelby will be 17 in June. Outside of my family, I've seen 311 35 times." That is a huge amount of times to see that band, my guy. Wow. How do you even do that? I mean, do you go on tour with them? Do you, like, follow them around? Do you go on the 311 cruise and they play like multiple shows in a week? I can't believe that. If you're only 50 and you've seen 311 35 times, you are crushing it, my guy. And I'm so glad Jake will be 18 tomorrow. Happy birthday to Jake, and future happy birthday to Shelby, who will be 17 in June. Thank you so much for sharing that, my guy. Here's a text that says, "Yep, Tracy Porter's pick six in Super Bowl 44 was truly sublime. How about when Sir Paul opened his 2002 show in New Orleans Arena with Hello Goodbye? That was magical. I'm glad you mentioned that. I was there. I was at that concert. I was wearing, oh my God, I was wearing, whatever happened to that Pink Floyd t-shirt? I had a really cool tie-dye Pink Floyd t-shirt that I wore to that concert. And I was there with my college roommate, Jason, and Alethea. I think that's right. Yes, that was an incredible concert. I don't remember Hello Goodbye in particular, but yeah, I saw Sir Paul at the arena in 2002. That was really, really special. Here's a text that says, "Ian, I can't tell you how emotional that Green Day song made us." In the last segment, we were talking about, you know, not just the Tracy Porter pick six, but also the blocked punt, but also the little concert that Green Day and U2 put on with Trombone Shorty ahead of that first game back in the Dome in 2006. Texter continues, says, "I'm crying as I'm typing this. That feeling is never going to die. Just special." I don't know what else I can add to this. I think you're exactly right. When the mood is right and the stars are doing a certain thing, that song still makes me emotional. And I wasn't even in the Dome. I was at Cooter Brown's with my handyman of all places. Strange. But yeah, the Green Day U2 song, the collab they did on The Saints Are Coming. No song, I'm exaggerating here, but no song will ever mean to anybody else what that song means to this community and this listening audience, because it's tied so specifically to what we lost, what we discovered about ourselves, and what we regained in that moment, that night, during that game. Let's go to break and hear a little bit about that. Oh, God, I can't take it. Okay, we'll pause there before we make everybody start crying. I'm Ian Hoke in for Scoot on WWL. I'll be right back. We'll get caught up with the news. We'll get our first look at traffic, and we'll talk about AI at 325. Stick around. Here's a text message that says, "Recently, I was overcome with profound emotion at the thought of our ancestors and how much they sacrificed individually and collectively for the freedoms and rights that we enjoy today. Now it's our generation's turn to carry the torch of freedom, but it feels like we're letting it slip away. I literally felt physical pain in my stomach. Are we on the cusp of losing everything we inherited? That's, my friend, texter, that is, it's a weighty thing to think about, isn't it? That's emotional. And it is, of course, understandable to feel that way, to feel a sort of mix of reverence for the sacrifices that our ancestors made for us, and also be concerned about the present. I would only offer that every generation faces its own sort of challenges in preserving and advancing the freedoms that we inherited. But your awareness of this and your passion about it, protecting these freedoms, show a dedication that ensures that legacy will continue. It's all about how we can contribute individually and collectively to safeguarding what we hold most dear. I think after news and traffic, we will play some audio that is reflective of a very sublime moment. This has come in on a listener request, and we are happy to fulfill that request for you. Here comes the news, then traffic, then back at me.